Good evening, everyone. Welcome to this
Evening.
evening's session about AI. My name is Julian Garner. I'm the Chief Executive here at Tabit, and I'm very pleased to welcome you to this evening's masterclass. And I'm delighted that we're joined by Charlie Joe, who's going to be running this evening's session. It was great after we did the technology survey early in the year, Tabit's first technology survey. There were so many questions about AI and how to use it. For a whole range of tasks. Charlie Joe reached out to me about that, and here we are today. And Charlie Joe's put a huge amount of time into designing this three-part course. And so I'm really looking forward to kicking off with the first session this evening because it's the first course, and because we're assuming that people don't know anything really about AI. We're just starting from the starting point. Some of it may be familiar to you, but bear with us. We think it's important just to cover the basics before moving onto other topics. So, but there will be time for questions or specific points if you come with those in mind. So, without further ado, I'd like to hand over to Charlie Joe.
Thanks, Julian. So, welcome to Confident with AI, a three-session introductory course stroke presentation in the use of artificial intelligence. I will start off by telling you a little bit about me and my background and what qualifies me to deliver this course. I'll then talk about what we're going to cover in the course, and I'll then talk specifically about what we're going to do today. So, my background is I've been blind for 40 years. So I've been an assistive technology user for 40 years. So I use screen readers, JAWS, and NVDA, and I've used scanning software and the internet for 30 years. So my adult life has been using assistive technology. I started using AI, I think the first weekend ChatGPT came out back in 2022. So I was telling Julian earlier, I'm about 9,000 hours into my time with generative AI. So over the last 3 years, I focused very much on using AI for accessibility. The thing that really struck me about AI was that for the first time in 40 years, the technology that the world was plowing billions and billions and billions of pounds into for the world's purposes was good for us. So all of those times when HumanWare or Freedom Scientific or Sight and Sound said to us, "Well, you're a very small market. We only sell a very small number of these things, so that's why you have to pay £5,500 for a Braille Note Evolve, or that's why a copy of JAWS is £1,000, or a copy of Kurzweil is £600. You're a small market." For the first time ever, these AI systems can describe images to us, and they're not doing it for blind people. OpenAI aren't thinking, "Well, we'll get this vision language model perfect so blind people could look at images of their cats." That's just a side effect. They want to use it for industrial things. They want to be able to look at widgets coming off an assembly line and the computer to see whether they're correct or not. They want to look at toast in a toaster and know whether it's been cooked properly so they can automate kitchens. They want to automate Amazon warehouses. They want robots wandering around the streets delivering parcels. So they're developing self-driving cars. They're not so blind people can get home without being able to drive. But we are benefiting from this. So that's why I very much really jumped on board with the vision side of it. I become obsessed with getting better and better images out of these models. And I created a number of different things. I created model methods to work more safely with the models. So risk models like the traffic light system we'll look at next week. Last year I did an internship with a company that creates an app called PixieBot that you may or may not have used on your iPhone. That's one of these image describers where you can send an image or a video to PixieBot and you can choose from a range of different models. So one of the things I developed was a thing called the mixture of models method, where we take one image, we get three different models to describe it, and then we combine the three different descriptions into an ensemble description. And the hope there is that by combining three different models, they fail in different ways, and you get one combined description, which is better than a single model. It isn't perfect. None of these models will give you a perfect description of an image or a perfect answer. We'll come back to that later. But if you use a mixture of models, you get a more a mod a description you can be more confident in. So the phrase that we came up with was that if you need it to be right, ask a human. If you want it to be right, ask your mom. Mixture of models. I'm better coming up with AI ideas than marketing slogans. So that was one of the things that I came up with Pixiebot. I also came up with a thing called the native blind description, and that was came from blind people telling me that they've never been able to see, and these models telling them the colors of things was just wasting their time or describing the, you know, the perspective. So the native blind model protocol was basically saying to these models, describe this to somebody who's never been able to see, and you do get a very different description from that. So those are three things that I came up with around vision language models. I also did an awful lot of work around generating alt text for images on the internet. So I came up with the thing concept called context augmented generation, which allows the AI to use the text around an image on a web page to give context to that image, which again doesn't mean that the alt text will be perfect, but it means that it is better. So I did that that internship last year, and now I've moved on to other areas of work. I don't really do accessibility AI research anymore, but I'm more in a sort of education side of it now. I'd like to start off by talking about AI, artificial intelligence. In fact, it's about 70 years old. It was first talked about back in 1956 when people thought in the summer they could basically get artificial intelligence boxed off, and that it wouldn't be a very difficult problem to solve. Turned out to be a lot more difficult than people thought, and over the next 65 years there were various what was called AI winters where people basically lost all hope and no work was done on it, and then something would happen and there'd be a load of progress and people would become optimistic again and think they were just about to make breakthroughs, and then that would fall off again. So in the 1990s, you might remember that IBM wrote a system that could beat the World Chess Championship, and everybody got really excited, but it didn't really go anywhere. And then back in 2016, OpenAI, a company we'll talk about a lot tonight, created, in fact, it wasn't OpenAI, DeepMind, another company we'll talk about later on, created a system called AlphaGo, which beat the world's Go championship. And that was considered to be a much more difficult game and a much bigger achievement than the Deep Blue computer that beat the World Chess Championship in the 90s. So that was considered to be a real seminal moment, a real breakthrough moment. But the AI that we're going to talk about today is generative AI or large language models. What you will have heard of probably called ChatGPT. A lot of people like to say that Google invented the T in ChatGPT because that stands for Transformers, and that was sort of invented in 2017, 18. But it wasn't until 2022 when ChatGPT was launched on an unsuspecting world and we all went crazy. And as I said earlier, I went crazy that first weekend. I started using it on the Friday evening and I pretty much didn't stop. So that's generative AI, which is the AI that is very popular at the moment. So what we're going to talk about over these three sessions is how to approach using generative AI in a safe and useful way as a visually impaired person. So next week we'll focus very much on using it for images and accessibility, how to access a PDF that might be badly formatted, how to get the information from an image, how to look at a graph, how to look at a diagram, all of those different things around accessibility AI, websites, images, and what have you. The third session we'll talk about safety, managing your personal information, keeping your finances and your private health information safe online. Tonight is very much an introductory session. So, we're going to talk about two main things this evening. We're going to talk about AI assistants, and then we're going to talk about what it is you're actually talking to. So, AI assistants, they're the chatbots that people talk about. You heard people talk about ChatGPT and Claude and Gemini and things like that. They're the sort of things that you hear people having conversations with, people falling in love with, people having mad conversations with people, having long-ranging business ideas with people, arguing with the sort of thing that you can sit down and you can type backwards and forwards to, and you can talk for a very long time. There will be an email sent around afterwards, and all of the information I'm going to talk about over the next hour will be on a website which we'll have access to, and that's accessible. I created it myself, and there'll be a Word document for the second half. So the first half, which talks about the different AI models, quite repetitive because it basically gives you the same information for each model. So that is better looked at in Safari or Chrome or whatever web browser you use. The second session is more of a written document, so that will be sent around as a Word document. So AI assistants. There's lots of words and names and numbers going to be bandied around today. We'll talk about AI assistants. I'll talk about ChatGPT and Claude and things like Grok, Gemini, Copilot. And we'll talk about models. And the models we'll talk about will be things like Opus or Gemini or GPT. And they'll all have numbers and names as well. All of those things you don't really need to worry about at the moment. Those are things that you can explore further. The assistants themselves will tell you all about them. Equally, they are also part of what you get access to if you pay. So all of the models that we're going to talk about this evening are all free to use. But with them being free, you only get access to limited amounts of use, and you might only also get access to limited models. If you pay, you may get access to being able to use them for longer, use them for more complicated things, and you may get access to more powerful models. We're going to talk about five different AI assistants tonight. We're going to talk about ChatGPT. We're going to talk about Claude. We're going to talk about Copilot. We're going to talk about Gemini. And we're going to talk about, last but not least, Grok. Five models from five companies that you will have heard of. You have noticed that I've made a deliberate mistake there. I've called them models. Those are not the names of the models, those are the names of the assistant. ChatGPT. This is the original chat generative AI chat model. You can access it chat.com. All of these details are in the notes. That's the one produced by OpenAI. It's GPT 5.6 is the latest version. As I said earlier, GPT stands for the T, and that stands for Transformer, created by Google, which they like to remember. All you need to remember with this is that you don't need to pay to use it. If you pay, you get to use it more. If you pay, you get to use it more, and you get to use the better models more. Claude is by Anthropic. Claude.ai is the address for that. Unfortunately, ChatGPT is chat.com. Claude is Claude.ai. The other three will be different as well. Don't worry about remembering these. In many ways, Claude is exactly the same as ChatGPT, and in many ways, Claude is completely different to ChatGPT. It's a large language model. It's based on Transformer architecture. It's made by people who used to work at OpenAI and left because they didn't like OpenAI, but everybody left OpenAI because they didn't like OpenAI. But it is seen as the more serious, the more philosophical, some say more woke, some say more ethical, alternative to ChatGPT. Copilot is the Microsoft chat super AI assistant. Originally, this was pretty much synonymous with ChatGPT. They used the same models, but now Microsoft use different models in different parts of Copilot. And because it's Microsoft, you'll use the Microsoft Windows Copilot, the Microsoft 365 Copilot, the Microsoft Office Live Plus extended version, Azure Copilot. They're all called Copilot. They're all from Microsoft, and they will all use whatever models Microsoft decides to let you use wherever you're using them. But essentially, they work exactly the same as ChatGPT and Claude. You type in a question, you get an answer back. Fourth one, Google Gemini. Just to be awkward, this is access to gemini.google.com. Again, it's exactly the same model type of AI as ChatGPT, Claude, and Copilot. It's our good friend, the Transformer. It's an AI assistant, it's a chatbot. You ask it a question, it gives you an answer. One thing to bear in mind is that all of these models, all of these four, and the next one that we come to, are all vision language models. So you can attach a photograph to any chat with any of the models, and you can ask it to describe the photograph. You can ask it to think about the photograph. So you can say, how many cats are in this image? If it's an image that says there's lots of cats, you can ask it. If it's a book cover, you could say, what sort of book is this? So they will all accept vision inputs. Some of them will create images for you as well. ChatGPT, Copilot, Gemini, and Grok will generate images for you. Claude won't. Where Gemini is different to all of the others is that it's multimodal. So you can give a video to Gemini and say, describe this video. You can give a song to Gemini and say, review this song. And it can effectively watch the video. It can effectively listen to the song. So I like to, I work as a design fictionist. I create conceptual art, and some of the things that I do is I generate songs around some of my concepts for some of my pieces. And then what I do, I get Gemini to write fake reviews from fake song music mags. And it can, as I can listen to the song, I can hear the music and it can hear the words. It can watch a video. You can say, watch this video and tell me what happens in the third minute, or what does the person speaking look like? And I'm sure you've heard of, or maybe seen, or maybe now I've told you this, it makes you wonder, could it not do audio description? Because what is audio description if not watching what's happening on the screen and telling you? And in fact, it can do that. So Pixiebot, the app that I mentioned earlier, you can send a video to Pixiebot and it will give you a description. But it won't give you audio description as you might get on Apple TV or on the BBC. It won't say the man's picked up a gun. It will describe the video as if it's describing an image. So it will say, this is a video of a boat sailing down a stream with an owl and a pussycat in the boat. It's a beautiful pea green boat. The owl's playing a small guitar, and I can't remember the words. So it won't describe the video as you go along. It will just give you a description of it. But Gemini can be very useful for that because, as I say, with Gemini you can upload images, videos, and audio songs to it. One of the very interesting things somebody was doing with Pixiebot was they were uploading a video and asking the AI to translate it from Spanish to English. So it wasn't supposed to do that. That was a little hack they did. As it described what was in the image, it would also transcribe the language. Our final model tonight is Grok. This is the one used by created by XAI, Elon Musk's SpaceX company, which is now, I think, called SpaceX AI. It's connected to X, the social network, so formerly Twitter. It can draw information from Twitter to answer your questions. So, as you can imagine, Twitter X can be quite a strange place with some strange ideas being expressed. And Grok has been known to take on some of the beliefs and attitudes expressed on X. So ChatGPT, Claude, Copilot, Gemini, and Grok. Can you give me a time check, Julian?
Yeah, we're just coming up to 8 o'clock. Perhaps we could just remind people how they can access the different models. We talked about the websites, but are they all available with apps on
Oh
iPhone and Android?
yeah, of course. So all of these models are available from the websites, but they all have their own iPhone and Android apps as well. I have an iPhone, and all of these the five apps are accessible with VoiceOver. I'm told from my research that they're accessible on Android with TalkBack as well. They work in the same way. They have an edit box that you type into, you can dictate into, then you send a message and it replies back. You can attach a photograph from your camera roll in your phone, or you can share an image from another app on your iPhone into this app and it will describe it. And they're available on the iPad as well. Anybody got any questions?
I think just to follow that up, sorry, it's Julian here again. I know that Claude has a desktop version, doesn't it? That's sits slightly separately from the app and the website. So depending on which application you're using, it's worth just sort of working out where you're primarily going to use it and where you set up an account. I think the other thing I'd say is that it's you talked about paid versions versus free versions. I think it's generally, would you agree that it's generally good to create an account and start to customize and personalize your profile on whichever one you go for to improve the quality answers? Maybe we'll come on to that in a minute about how to improve the outputs of these applications. But yeah, I think creating an account is probably a good first step if people are comfortable with doing that. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, that's a good point. So, I talked about how you don't have to pay to use these things, but if you pay, you do get to use it more, and you get to use better models. There is another benefit to creating an account, as Julian's just said. And as I said, all of these systems are now have started to build in memories. So with all of the systems from this, most of the systems from the start, you could give it information about yourself that it would then. You could tell it what to call you. You could tell it you were blind, so when you put an image in, it described it to you. You could tell it how you liked it to talk to you and present information to you. What all of the systems have started doing the last 6 months is it now remembers you. So, I will be talking to it, and it will suddenly mention Princess, which is one of my cats. And it can freak you out, can't it, Julian, the first time it happens? Because it does shock you.
Yeah, it feels very personal, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. But what happens is because the memories that the way the memory system is working now, it will refer to something that you said a week ago. Sometimes they're not very good, and it'll keep saying, as you've said over the last 12 months, and you're thinking, actually, I only said this in the last 24 hours. So it can be a bit irritating, but mostly the memory system does make it more personable, makes it feel more personal, makes it feel more real. And this is something that we'll talk about in the second half. This is one of the dangers of these systems, that the fact that it remembers you is something that people do, isn't it? So when you meet somebody, if they remember you or remember something about you, it makes you warm to them. It's part of being a human being. Part of being a good communicator is to remember something about somebody. These systems do that now as well, and it can be a problem because you can let your guard down. But as Julian said, if you create an account, then the memory system will kick in. And it will get to know you over the days and weeks and months, and it I say will start to tailor how it talks to what it knows that you like, what it knows you need. And I think that is something that is making these systems much better than they were 12 months
It
ago.
saves repeating, so it repeats every time you use it, saying, "I live in London, so give me information that's relevant to London," or "I like things with facts and figures, not assumptions." So you can start to guide it to be more effectively what you want to get out of it. So I think that customization can really add value. Just to before we move on to techniques, Charlie Joe. The big question, I guess, if people haven't used these before, and we're advocating, I guess, like, if in doubt, you just pick one and get on and try it. rather than worrying too much about which model to use. Which would be a go-to? And I know that there is more than one answer to this, but which is the go-to one to start playing with? And in what context? I know we talked about some of the reasons why you might pick different models in brief.
Yeah, so I pay for ChatGPT and Claude, and I have Gemini free through the Open University, so I have the paid versions of those three, and I also have the paid version of Copilot through my Microsoft 365 membership. So I would say ChatGPT. If you haven't used any of them, and you want to start off completely from scratch, you can't go wrong with ChatGPT. The website is completely accessible. The desktop apps are completely accessible. I was saying to Julian that I was spent all week last week using the new app. And then on Friday they brought out a version and I couldn't use it all weekend. And then on Monday they brought out the next new version and it's back to normal. So even when they do break it, you're not waiting 6 months. If they break it, the very next version fixes it.
Yeah, so I think ChatGPT is probably a good go-to for beginners, isn't it? And that's maybe if you're living in the Google ecosystem, then Gemini is very good, and you will find it natively on your Android phone. And if you're using the Google Chrome browser, there's an AI mode on the Chrome browser which will be using Gemini. So Gemini is very good if you're in that space. And if you have a Microsoft account, then Copilot is very good in that space. And the benefit of Copilot is that it operates within the data environment of your Microsoft account, so is more private in terms of accessing documents and such like, but can be quite complicated in terms of working out which version you've got and whether you've got a paid version or not, depending on your license, whether you've got a family account, a work account. Or
I think
a free account.
the best one to pick is just the one that either, if you have a Google phone, and then pick a Google. If you have an iPhone, it doesn't really matter. If you pay for Microsoft 365, then you'll have some sort of paid version. If you have a Google Workspace account, you'll have some sort of paid version. If you have an EE Mobile, you can ask them to add Google AI Plus as your add-on. There are lots of, if you're an Open University student, you can get a year of Google free. There are lots of ways to get this the more the paid version free, and a lot of versions to pay less. So Julie and I, oh sorry, about to dox you, Julian. I was going to say Julie and I both pay for Claude. Sorry, Julian. We both have the paid
But I
version
think
of Claude, but that you can pay for that for a year. So it's a one-off payment, and you don't have to
do
pay every
that.
month. It, that
But I
that
think
helps.
I think you probably get more by you're probably if you're an uncertain which to go with, you're probably better off picking one and learning to use it well. And customizing it and learning how to use it more than switching between platforms and getting a bit confused about which one you should be using. That they all sort of piggyback, they'll take steps forward and keep up with each other in terms of the sophistication of the models in general. And so you won't go too far wrong with any of them, but learning to use them and experimenting, learning how to customize it is a probably best way forward than trying to cover all of the different AI tools and worrying about it. I think it's also worth mentioning that there are some embedded AI assistants that you're probably using without realizing it. If you're using an Alexa Echo device, there'll be lots of AI running in the background. If you're using the Be My Eyes app, it'll be running AI in the background. If you're using Jaws, is it
Picture smart.
PictureSmart on Jaws, that'll be using AI. So without knowing it, AI is creeping is in being embedded in lots of apps and tools, smart glasses. But yeah, so it's out there and you're probably using it well anyway. But what we were focusing on here are the AI chat tools that you can get in and play with. So okay, so let's move on then, Charlie Joe, to the
Okay, so
next session, if that's right.
just 2 minutes to finish this section off.
Brilliant. Yeah.
So because it, it, we've so we've talked about AI assistants so far, And Julian, you've really led us into the next section, which is models. And I've used the word model by mistake because it's very easy to get confused between the assistant and the model. So the five companies that we've talked about who produce these five AI assistants, they also produce the models that the assistants use. So Julian talked about Be My Eyes, which, as we all know, is the volunteer assistant app, but they have the Be My AI feature. So that sends a photograph to an AI model, a vision language model, which is the same model that's in these five assistants we've just talked about. The Envision assistant app thingy that sent images off to an AI model. So the five companies, the OpenAI, Anthropic, Google DeepMind, Microsoft, and SpaceX AI, the companies that make the five AI assistants, also create the models that those assistants use. As we've said, if you pay, you get access to more advanced models. And one of the models is the model that's been in the news today, which has been, attacking other software companies. If you have the free version, you don't get to use the most powerful models. So one of the issues that you might have is you may have tried AI a year ago. You may speak to someone who's tried an image describer 18 months ago, and they'll say, "Oh, it's rubbish. It doesn't, somebody said to me, "Oh, I couldn't even tell the difference between a horse and a dog." And I'm thinking, well, that's, I'm getting much better results every day, and it can definitely tell the difference between a horse and a dog. And it's because of the model. So the Pixiebot app that I talked about that I worked on last year, what distinguishes Pixiebot from Be My Eyes is that Pixiebot gives you access to 15 different models. So it's a Swiss Army knife of an image describer app. So you can go into Pixiebot and you can pick OpenAI or Anthropic or X or Microsoft. And you might ask, well, why would I pick a different model? And the issue is that some of the models are better for some things than others. And so we had a customer who said his, he was getting photographs from a friend and it wouldn't describe them. And we found out that the Grok model would describe those images. They were perfectly legal. They were just personal. The Gemini app and the OpenAI app wouldn't, said, "Sorry, I can't help you with this." But the Grok app was more than willing to describe those images to him. So the Pixiebot app allows you to pick the image, the image model, the vision language model that might be better for your particular image. So if it's a video, you can pick one that will describe video. If it's a personal image, you pick Grok. As well as the models from those frontier labs and these five companies that we've talked about with these five assistants, they're what referred to as frontier AI models. That's probably more OpenAI, Anthropic, and Google DeepMind and X are called the frontier models. You can also use what's called open source or open weights models. Most of those come from Chinese companies, but there are also some open weights models from Gemini and OpenAI and Meta, the people who do Facebook. They have a series of models called Llama. I joke that they're the Welsh ones because it's about double L, but not many people understand that, especially in America. The beauty of using an open weights model is that if you had a big enough computer, you can download those models and run them on your own computer, and it's completely free then. It just costs the cost of the electricity and the computer. So some models can run on your iPhone. So when you use an open weights model on your iPhone, it isn't sending that image off anywhere. Nobody's computer in the cloud is looking at your photograph. There's no possibility of it being stored on somebody's computer in the cloud. It stays on your phone. Obviously, it's a smaller model, so it might not be as accurate as sending it up to a big model in the cloud. So you have the trade-off there between accuracy and privacy. But that is why people use open weights models. And when we come to the final session, we will go into much more detail into image and data privacy.
So, CJ, just to say, In the models, so for example, when I go into Claude, and I go into open write a question, it defaults to something called Sonnet, which is its default model. But it also gives me some options. It's called Opus 4.8, which it says is for complex tasks. Haiku 4.5, which is great for quick answers. So once you get under the skin of these things, and you're using it for different types of tasks, then you can select the model that you think is going to be best for you. The default is normally perfectly fine, isn't it? So
See,
just use the, I
what
think
makes me
the suggestion is use the standard model and don't worry about it. Or you can ask the tool itself, which model should I be using? And then it might recommend a different model. So
I mean, one way to think about these models is like different models of car. So if you say, well, I'm going to use BMW, you might need to use a one series if you just want a small runabout to town. But if you want to go, if you want to tow a boat or a caravan, or you want to try, if you want to take seven people, or if you want to race around a racetrack, you use a different model. You use a sporty model, or you use a sport utility model, or you use a heavy lifting model. And so that's where the different models families come in. And this is why it's confusing, because it's all Claude, and then it's Claude Opus, and then it's Claude Opus 4.8 or Claude Fable 5. And you can really get in the weeds with this, but when you're starting off, it doesn't, it makes no difference whatsoever. Just use the standard one that you're presented with, and don't worry about it. So all of this information will be on the website, which we're going to send you the link to at the end of the session. There's a section for each of those different AI assistant. They all contain the same information. They answer the same question. It's quite repetitive, so I wouldn't go to the heading level one and do a say all and press two and it'll say ChatGPT, and then two and it'll say Claude, and then two and it'll say Gemini, and then do a say all and read the Gemini entry. And then when you read the Copilot entry, it will answer the same questions. It will talk about what it's good for, what problems it can have, how to, so that's this section is fairly for reference rather than for listening to all the way through. So that's the end of section one. If anybody has any questions, this would be a really good time to ask, because we're about to move into the second half of the presentation.
just going to throw a question at you.
Go on then, cool.
I was asking the question, what's your thoughts on Meta AI in relation to its application in smart glasses?
So to be honest with you, the glasses have been the most disappointing thing for me over the last 3 years. So 2 years ago, I was fairly convinced that by now we'd all be getting up in the morning, putting our AI glasses on, and wearing them all day long. I don't know about you, but the thing that's really struck me over the last 2 years is that I'm out of the habit of looking at things. I've been obsessed with image descriptions. I've been pushing these models every single day to get better and better image descriptions out of them. I've realized I've never looked at any of my friends. Just doesn't occur to me to go onto my friend's Facebook page and look at their images. And yet, I've spent umpteen hours writing prompts, writing specifications, writing methods and models to get these things to describe things better. I invented context augmented generation. I invented vibe text. I invented extended visual narratives. I never look at any of my friends. Never look out of the window. I go to the fridge and say, is this a strawberry or a banana bottle? But I never point the camera out of the window and say, what does the garden look like? And that's because after 40 years not being able to see, I've got out of the habit. I've become audio native. So I think there's
Our biggest problem, though, is that Meta isn't, we can't use the live AI in the UK. And once that comes available to Meta glasses, then it would become much more useful. But for some reason, they won't allow it over here.
So, right, okay, so because I know the Hey Meta, look and tell me what's in front of me works in the UK now, doesn't it? But the
Not
live
for
air.
me.
Oh, right, okay. I mean, it does for me. And to be honest, it is like magic, isn't it? You know, you can just go to the fridge, you can take a bottle of protein drink out and hold up and say, "Hey, Meta, look and tell me what this is," and it will say it's strawberry bowl. You
But
know,
that's
that's with
taking a photograph. It's not actually doing live
no, no,
AI.
yeah. Now I have got the live version on mine, but I think because I use a VPN, it thinks I'm in Canada.
That's what it is
Just
then, yeah.
to cut in, sorry, this is Sandra. The problem with that is that sometimes it will hallucinate, and I find so it will just make up. So if I ask it a sell by date, it will just tell me something that's completely rubbish. And so I'm more likely to use Be My Eyes for something like that than the Meta and a human support for that.
Yeah, I mean, so going back to the models, the Meta glasses use a different model than Be My Eyes, and the Be My Eyes is a better model.
I'm not using the Be My AI. I'm using Be My Eyes as in call Be My Eyes and a human will read it
Oh,
to me.
right, okay.
I'm not using the computer generated thing because I can't trust it a millimeter. Because it won't say, "Oh, I can't read that." It will just make something else up instead.
I've had the Meta Glass for probably a year now, and I can tell you it's completely what you just said. It's always giving you the wrong information when you need critical information.
The important thing to realize, guys, is that like AI isn't, like they always say, it's no longer foolproof. It's never foolproof, and there's always going to be mistakes, and you have to go in knowing that when you use it. And if you're not willing to take that risk, then it, quite frankly, you don't use it.
This is interesting because I've been using Be My AI, but only for a few months. And I'm always photographing out the window because, unlike you, Charlie Joe, I'm obsessed with what's out the window. What are other people looking at? I hadn't thought of going on Facebook and photographing my friends' profile pictures, but that's brilliant. But by coincidence, I did do that just earlier today, but it's a really good idea. So my cousin's son wears a hat, dark glasses, and has a beard. So who knew? That's fantastic. I love that. But what I will say to Sarah is that my phone, very well, my AI, Be My AI, it quite often says there's a panel on that product's packaging, but the writing's too small to read. So there we go. We're getting different results, aren't we, from different people? I did have an actual question
There we are.
with regard to the Chat GPT, Claude, Gemini, and all the others. I have experimented a wee bit with Chat GPT and with Claude. My problem is, well, mostly I want them to draw pictures for me, but I find them really, really inaccessible, or kind of not technically not inaccessible, but very, very hard to use, particularly as a blind person. So ChatGPT drew me some pictures. So obviously, what I wanted it to do then was describe the pictures it had drawn, or at least let me save them into my file so that I could get somebody else to describe them. But I couldn't. They were kind of locked in the screen they were being displayed from. They didn't seem to be savable, so I couldn't get it to refine its picture. I just, in all sorts of fiddly diddly ways, I found the engines that I've tried out so far just so hard to use that it's not really fun. Am I just not very good at this? Do I need to settle in for a really, really long, steep learning curve? Is that all there is to it?
No, I
Or
don't.
have you got any tips?
Well,
Charlie Joe, do you want to come back on that?
yeah, so what you're describing is the way it was a year ago.
Okay.
So one of the things is that these, like I said, the app I was using obsessively last week, it broke on Friday and I couldn't use it until Monday. But
Okay.
the images thing, that used to be an issue where you used to have, it was fiddly, but now when it generates an image, there's just a button that says that you tap that and it says share or download, and you press download and it just
Okay.
comes up with a standard file
Yeah.
box.
It was April I was doing this. It wasn't a year ago.
This April.
I'm willing to give it another go.
Okay. Well, again, it depends whether you're using it on. One of the issues is with this is that if you use ChatGPT on the website, it doesn't do exactly the same as the ChatGPT app on Windows does, or the app on the Mac does, and it doesn't do the same as the app on the phone does. And the one you're talking to doesn't necessarily know which one it is. So I was having a situation where I was using the website version. It was telling me things. It was saying, "Oh, I can't do that." And I was typing into, "Well, you did it yesterday." And it turned out yesterday I was on the Windows app. And the Windows app can do different things to the website. And it can be absolutely infuriating and frustrating. But, I've been
So
I've been
it would be hard for Tavip, for example, to write crib sheets or do blogs about with advice about hints and tips is what you're saying, I think, because that all the different platforms are A, changing quite rapidly, and B, even if you pick just one of them, you've got it on several different platforms, and it's kind of different from month to month. And
The
okay,
good
that's a
thing,
shame.
but well, no, the thing
Charlie
is,
Joe,
yeah.
would you say that any are better in terms of the accessibility of the interface? Forget the results that they churn out in terms of the either using VoiceOver with the interface or a screen reader on the computer. In terms of accessibility of the interface, are any
They're all
better?
pretty good. They're all pretty good now.
Okay.
The chat apps, the main chat apps are pretty good. There's the issues that you've had with the images isn't current. And the beauty of it is that they are very good at giving you the instructions. So all of the material that you're going to get after this call has all been created by me in the last week, and it's all been created with AI. So they are very good at staying up to date quickly. One of the differences with AI is that rather than us waiting for things to be fixed for years and months and begging developers to make things accessible, it's just not an issue anymore. So you'll use the Claude app or the ChatGPT app, and you'll notice every time you use it can be different. It just gets better and better, and then sometimes it breaks, and then it improves again. But the AI is writing the AI software. So when people send in bug reports, they're processed automatically. So the things are fixed very quickly. They're also can be, I say, can break very quickly, but they tend to recover very quickly. So if you try it again, you'll probably find that you can work with images.
Would you say the desktop, so if we use ChatGPT as an example, though, because that was brought up earlier, would you say the desktop apps work better than the apps that you would use, for example, in Chrome or Firefox, the browser-based apps? Or does it not make a difference?
Yeah, it does because it connects to things. I mean, one of the issues now is they've just like last week, they've now got ChatGPT and ChatGPT Classic and the two apps. And the one that's called ChatGPT is what used to be called Codex, which is the programming app. And the one that's called ChatGPT Classic is what used to just be called ChatGPT. And when you go into that, you're going to have two options. So it's just getting more and more complicated.
Is that a
But
parallel?
can you do more on the desktop app
You
specifically than you can
can.
on the,
I
like,
think,
say, Chrome?
yes, you can, because for instance, so again, I'm loath to definitely say it because I might be wrong, but one of the things they can do now, they can use your computer for you. So if you use a Mac, it can basically use the computer for you.
That's cool.
Yeah. So you can say,
I
oh,
had a
go
quick question, sorry. Real
on.
quick, because we were talking about the accessibility of apps and things. ChatGPT, and this is pretty recent still. I don't know if it's just an issue with my phone, to be fair, but like ChatGPT has this thing where you're using it, and let's say it has a relatively long prompt that's giving you its prompt, and if you keep prompting and having it do stuff, like eventually sometimes it'll jump and not scroll correctly. And I was hoping that they would eventually fix that, but it seems like they haven't.
Yeah, I get the same experience exactly like you described as well. I give up ChatGPT. I've moved on to Gemini web and the app. It's much better. Just to add on, the
Yeah.
longer it gets, it's just worse on ChatGPT for whatever reason.
Yeah, I mean, I have mine where my screen lock keeps coming on and it drives me around a twist.
Charlie
So,
Joe, just to mention about the differences between some of the different platforms. On I know on I haven't used all of them recently, but with Claude, there's a desktop version which does have some different functionality to the web version and probably the app, in that you can have projects and you can have coding. So and that one can do more agentic AI, in terms of interacting with your computer. So when you're wanting to start to automate and use agentic agents, then probably some of the applications installed on a computer or Copilot are going to have more integration with your Windows working environment than a web version would, or your app, because that's not got as much access to your underlying data set. So there's some differences creeping in, and that might reflect the two versions of ChatGPT, where one's about coding, one's about general browsing. So there's some different platforms emerging, which might make a difference of what you pick.
And that's the issue. These things are getting more and more complicated. So remember very early on, I said what we're talking about when we talk about AI assistants is we're talking really about last year's AI. This year is the buzzword you might heard people talking about is talking about agents, agentic working. And that's basically where you just tell the AI to do something and it just goes off and does it. And that can be something like as simple as a deep, there's this feature that they all have called deep research. And you can say to Gemini, for instance, I want you to go away and research portable Braille displays that are available to buy in the UK. Tell me all the different ones, where you can buy them from, how much they cost, what are the pros and cons, and it will go away and it will search the internet over and over and over again, and it will come back with a 25-page report on portable Braille displays. It will give you all the information about where they're available from. It'll give you links to all of the reviews. It'll do tables. It will draw you a picture. It'll do you a quiz. It'll make you a podcast. So that's a deep research agent, but there are now agents. So I have been developing my website for the last week, and I literally just go to a chat box and type in on this page, change this heading to a heading level two, and it just does it. I don't have to worry about HTML or any of that internet, not rubbish. I just type into a chat box on the Confidence with AI session one page. This afternoon I said it says there are three sections. There are only really two sections, so get rid of section three, and it just does it. It does on some sort of internal gubbins, it uploads it to the internet, it does some other thing, and within 5 minutes I just go onto the internet and it's there. No typing HTML into code, no worry, it's accessible, no worrying about things. If I say add this image to the page, I just type in add alt text and it adds WCAG compliant alt text to the image. So that's using a coding agent. So when I type in do this, it goes away and it does about 1,000 different things on the computer. It uses the computer for me. So it types into the files, it takes that file and it converts it into a web page, it uploads that web page to the internet, it publishes it on the internet. It does all of those different steps that you would have had to do yourself before. It just does it on its own.
So the power is definitely increasing, isn't it? But with that comes a health warning, just to flag it that before you flick the switch, to do some of that stuff, you need to make sure that you're happy with it, accessing files on your computer and doing stuff. So, there are some checks and balances which we'll come on to in terms of confidence, I think, with the results of AI and sort of managing the risk that you're happy with. So is that a good point to move on to that
It is. Let
final
me just check with them.
section?
Alexa, what time is it?
The time is
It's
8:35 p.m.
8:35 p.m.
Right, okay. What I want to talk about is when we ask AI a question, what we get back is an answer. It looks like an answer. It sounds like an answer. So after I wrote the sections on those five models last week, I uploaded the document to ChatGPT, and I said, "Describe these five models to me as if they were members of the Spice Girls." And it said, "Wow, that's a really strangely appropriate analogy." It said, "ChatGPT is sporty, is Ginger Spice." He said, "Claude is obviously Posh Spice. Copilot is obviously Sporty Spice in Microsoft branded sportswear. It's a baby Spice is Gemini, soft on the surface, but with a surprising amount of machinery behind it." And lo and behold, it said Grok was Scary Spice. And that all seemed about right to me, because obviously I know the Spice Girls, I know those five models, and they fitted in with all of my prejudices, didn't they? So, you know, Claude is very much Posh Spice. Claude thinks it's a cut above everyone else. Scary Spice is obviously Grok, because you never know what it's going to say. It could come out with anything. You need to be really careful. So it gave me a really good answer, which I considered to be really valuable and really good. But what I'm here to tell you tonight is that that isn't an answer, though these things don't give you answers. They give you answer-shaped objects. It looks like an answer. It smells like an answer. It quacks like an answer. But it isn't actually an answer. If you ask it what's the capital of France, it will say Paris. Occasionally, it could say banana or kittens or incommunicado, because it's giving you a probabilistic answer. So these things, the basic operation, it just predicts the next word. So it says the capital of France is, and we all know that the next word is almost always going to be Paris. But there's a very small chance it could be yellow. So the second session is called Know What You're Holding. So choose your AI assistant and then know what it is you're dealing with. So you, as the lady pointed out, she doesn't trust it with sell by dates, but the other chap said it seems fine. You know, if I'm holding up a bottle of something and I know there's an orange one, I know there's a banana flavor and a strawberry flavor and a chocolate flavor in the fridge. If it says chocolate flavor, I'm going to trust it on it. If it says gazpacho or mulligatawny soup, I'm going to think something's wrong here. So you need to know what it is you're holding. So one of the examples I use is if I say to Claude, describe the view from the top of the Eiffel Tower, it will give me a really, really detailed and rich description of Paris. And it will probably be right, because these systems were trained on the entire contents of the internet. Billions and billions and trillions of words that have been published in books, in web pages, in blogs, in travel diaries, in captions to photographs. So it has thousands and thousands of descriptions of Paris from the top of the Eiffel Tower that have been written by humans. So when you ask it to generate a description from the top of the Eiffel Tower, it writes something that looks really convincing. The issue is that it gives you the answer that is probably right. So it gives you the answer that sounds right. On average, that sounds like what the answer to that question should be. And the problem is that when you're asking it something that you don't really know much about, it sounds really convincing. So when I asked it about the Spice Girls, it's fairly obvious that, you know, Scary Spice is going to be Grok, isn't it? And it's fairly obvious that Posh Spice is going to be Claude. But it could have said that Ginger Spice was Gemini and a Baby Spice was ChatGPT, and I wouldn't have argued with it. But the first description it gave me was convincing enough to convince me, and I was happy with it, and it didn't really make any difference. And if you point it out to the window and it says it's a lovely, clear, sunny day, and you know it's July, you're probably going to go with it, aren't you? One of the problems I had with my Meta glasses was that I connected to a very early beta
version of Pixiebot, which had live AI built into it. It was looking through somebody else's glasses. So I went in my kitchen. They said, there's a man standing 20 foot in front of you. And I was like, what? My kitchen isn't 20 foot long. But it was describing, it said, there's a white surface in front of you with a blue bowl and a blue plate on it. And it was not. I was in my kitchen that have black worktops and I don't have any blue crockery. So it was looking through somebody else's camera somewhere else in the world. But I knew enough to know that it was wrong. But if I'm looking at a date and I'm thinking, you know, what's the date on this loaf? And it says it's the 22nd of July. And I know that it's the 23rd of July. Well, that sounds about right, doesn't it? So I don't have any way of double checking. So this is the problem, that if I ask it to describe the image from the top of the Eiffel Tower, it's probably going to be right because it's consumed enough information. If I say I've got a funny pain in my chest, am I going to trust it if it says, oh, no, don't worry, you'll be fine. It's just indigestion. You know, just drink, have a hot drink. Probably not. So this is because it's an answer-shaped object. It's something that has the appearance of knowledge, the appearance of information, and it may be completely 100% correct, but it might not be. And it's up to you to know what you're dealing with, know what you're talking to, know what it is you're holding, and to be responsible for your own safety. Now, there's this concept in navigation called dead reckoning. And this, before we had GPS, a ship would know where it was at the start. And then it would say, right, this number of time, this length of time has passed, and this, we've gone in this direction. And they would use dead reckoning, and it would tell you about where you are. And in the middle of a big ocean, that was a pretty useful idea, wasn't it? Because you're roughly about here. So it was fine. If you're in a harbour surrounded by rocks, dead reckoning can kill you. So you need to be responsible for what you're doing with the answers you get. If you're doing research, and like I said before, if you send a deep research report out to do research into all of the different Braille displays, and then you phone up and try and buy one, and they say, we don't sell one called that, then it's made a mistake. Beauty of a deep research agent is it will give you the references so you can check on it. So again, you need to decide, what am I trying to do here? What stakes are there? If this is wrong, does it matter? With these assistants, you need to be aware that you get an answer-shaped object, that they provide good information, they provide dead reckoning, but it isn't truth.
So Charlie Joe, sorry to interrupt you, but what are the sort of the practical ramifications of this? How do people, you know, what are some guide points to get people, you know, for people to use it wisely?
Well, next week we're going to go on to this. But basically, you know, if it can get you killed, then don't do it. I mean, I'm expecting, you may have heard of a thing called a Glide. It's an AI-powered mobility device that's coming out this year. I'm expecting the delivery of one of those. And I'm going to trust that to guide me around wheelie bins and to stop me falling down holes in the street and to stop me falling down steps. But I'm not going to walk out in the middle of the road with it. You don't trust it to, you know, you're the one who decides to walk across the street. You're the one who has to listen to see whether you can hear a bus coming. So you don't trust AI if your health or your wealth depends on it. It's never been the case. When I was doing access to work assessments 25 years ago, 20 years ago, people say to me, well, I want to use scanning software to scan all of my paperwork. And I say, well, that's fine, but are you an accountant? And they'd be like, why? And I said, well, if you're an accountant, you can't guarantee that when it says 872 that it is an 892. If you need it to be 100% correct, you're going to have to use a human. It's the same with AI. If you need it to be 100% correct, you can never trust it.
So yeah, I mean, so practical things like Sandra, I think it was said that she uses the Be My Eyes volunteer service.
Yeah.
I think Ira also have a volunteer based service. So there are some.
I'm sorry to cut in. It's Sam again. Ira's a paid thing. There are various bits of it that are like sponsored minutes and stuff, but for personal questions like what color is my underwear, that is a paid service.
But you might choose to, you know, that's a decision, isn't it? It's Be My Eyes is free for the point of access, isn't it?
Yeah, it's worth saying that although it's free, it kind of you pay in your data. So I would never use it for utterly like private things because the photos are going off to the cloud and the training models and various things. But Be My Eyes is quite frank about that on their
And I
website.
think they've introduced a new, I forget who it was telling me, there's a new feature where you can have a private group, or there's a
And yeah, you
confidential
can
service where you can access for people who to might
yeah
read your
yeah
financial
you can
information, people who are accountants or sort of have passed
yeah
security
yeah
checks. Is that right? Is anyone can
that is a
confirm?
paid service. It's Be My Workplace or something like that. There's different bits of Be My Eyes, so there's the free version and then there's paid aspects of it.
There's a friends thing as well, isn't there, where you can have your own sort of friends group?
Yeah, the friends group one part I think is free on Be My Eyes. You can just have your own private like family or friends in that group as well. The other thing that I was also going to also say, I'm not saying that people should use it 100% as Charlie was saying, but with Aira AI in particular, that part is free. And if you need a human to verify it, that part is also free.
Yeah,
Wow.
that is the beauty of that. I use that all the time because obviously, you know, if you can't see it yourself, you never know 100%, do you? So yeah, the verify with a human on Aira is fantastic because that I'm amazed it's still free. It's brilliant. So you take a photograph or you upload a photograph, it gives you the AI description, and you just click the button and it sends it off to one of their interpreters, and then it comes back and says, yeah, it's been checked and it's fine. So then you have the confidence to know that it is how you think it looks. And you know, I mean, when I used to worry about whether my socks matched or not, I quite often used to use Be My Eyes to match my socks. But now with that, you can just use the photograph and you can say, do these socks match? And then you can just ch verify it if you want. Luckily, somebody told me that odd socks were a thing. So now I've embraced my odd socks life, and I don't care anymore.
So I think there are some useful backup systems within the tech environment, even and also then you can come off tech and just ask a friend or family member for something that's, you know, you need to get right. So
But
it's
also,
a balance of risk, isn't it? And being confident in what it's telling you and understanding the context. Sorry,
But it's
Dan, yeah, come
about
in.
operating, it's just about operating common sense. Like if you cross-reference it with a reliable source or just operate common sense when you use an AI, and if you feel that you struggle with that, then move away from it. Like you have to be capable of operating common sense with this stuff, because if you don't, you will get into a whole lot of trouble without meaning to.
Julian,
Cool.
it's Steve
Hi,
Plowman here. Can I
Steve.
just come in?
Yeah,
Yeah, hi, good evening.
do. Yeah, hi there.
Interesting conversation. CJ, so I've been messing around with Chat GPT mainly, and I've been using it quite extensively. But I must admit, I'm sitting here rather sort of not confused, but thinking, well, when I think how powerful these modules are, and we're being advised, and I take on board what you're saying, but when we when if we're talking about how inaccurate and unreliable it can all be, and we need to double check, I'm sitting here thinking, well, why are we using it? If the reason the very reason I'm asking ChatGP to do something for me is because I don't know the answer. For example, I might want to know whether the late whether a BMW 316 Series 2024 model, does it come with 18-inch wheels, for example? I'm just picking that out. And if ChatGP comes back and says, yes, it does come with 18-inch wheels, or you can get it with 20-inch wheels, but as standard, it comes with 18. If I have to go and double check that because I'm thinking of ordering one or whatever, then I think, well, what's the point in asking it in the first place? Do you understand? Am I? Does my point come? Does my point make sense?
If I can come in there, I think it's about One of the suggestions is making sure that you're getting references for stuff. So if you're particularly interested in a particular point, is ask the tool to give you references, which you can then go off and check. So, what's the reference for information on BMW? Provide a web link to the resource that it's used to inform you, so that you can go
Okay.
and verify that before taking it for granted. When I did a, I, but I think more broadly, I think they're really good for helping to shape ideas, to get creative input, to develop concepts. And if you're faced with a blank piece of paper and you need to write a report, using it as an intelligent intern, where you can ask it to help you to do something. Give me some ideas on this. Can you suggest a structure for exploring this piece of work? They're really, really useful at a conceptual level of shaping ideas and help you to form frameworks. So I think rather than using it, I think if you're wanting specific data and information, you're better off just doing a Google search for a specific piece of information and using that rather than an AI tool.
I
But I
mean,
think
I
they are very powerful I find in my work environment, in improving my productivity and creativity, I think, in a way that you probably can't get, easily elsewhere. So I think it's finding the right use for these tools. And then I think that, some of that detailed interpretation of images and text and so on will continue to improve massively. I mean, it has come on leaps and bounds, hasn't it, over the last 3 to 4 years? So I think it's just being realistic, but also trying to use it for the things that it's good at, but recognizing where it's not so good at.
I think that's
Oh,
I
sorry,
think a
go
lot of it is
on.
I think that's where a lot of education is needed as per this th these series of workshops is that which is actually how to use it effectively. I'm not sure that I talk for myself, no, nobody else, but one thinks I know how to use it, but I clearly I'm not. I mean, I use one issue I use it for is I use ChatGPT to scrape a website looking for scam emails, and I give it the criteria that I'm looking for, and twice a day it gives me a report. I guess should I be relying on that report? Should I still go and check myself? But
No,
maybe.
to be fair with you, I'm being very much on my best behavior tonight because this is advertised for complete beginners who have heard all of the scare stories. I spend about 12 hours a day working with these systems. I have three different ones open at a time that I'm constantly pasting from one into the other and double checking them. I use them as thinking partners. I use them as part of my work all the time. And I'm constantly cross-referencing them. I'm pitching one off against the other. I'm telling this one to create a steelman argument and argue against me with this. I'm getting it to check things. They are nowhere near as inaccurate as people fear. But
Just
again,
on
but we
your
have to.
inaccuracy,
Yeah, sorry, go on.
just on your inaccuracy statement. So, an interesting fact for most of you on here, I'm pretty sure you know this yourself, but how many of you know that pretty much 75% when you go and see a doctor at your GP surgery, they are actually using AI to write your entire health record? And that is the most basic thing. People don't tell you this unless you ask, but pretty much 50 to 75% of all doctor surgeries in the United Kingdom now use AI to transcribe what's happened in your doctor's appointment. And
Yeah,
unless
but
you
when
opt
you
out, they're not going to tell you.
Yeah,
if that's
because you
not
have
is
things like
that
Whisper now and things like that will do that, right?
yep
So, it's
So that's how unscary AI is, because if they're going to use it in your GP surgeries, in healthcare, it is being used, and you just don't know about it unless you ask.
Thanks,
Is
Dan. That's
that doing the
helpful. Can...
diagnosis or just writing up the writing it up? Is that diagnosing as well then? Is
So
that what you're...
it's so they don't diagnose the conditions. That is entirely up to the doctor. But what the AI will now do is it will transcribe the notes from your appointments. So you might walk into your doctor's surgery, you'll sit opposite your doctor, and normally the doctor will sit there and he will type up or she the results of, I've spoke to the patient about this today and they discuss this and this. And they don't have to do that anymore. The AI does that for them. The AI will listen to the conversation, it will record the conversation, and it will interpret it, and it will put it into your record. That is the most basic level of what AI does, and people do not know about it unless they ask.
But Dan,
Sorry.
it's up to the doctor to verify and check that the record's correct.
It
That's
is,
true,
but they,
yes.
it is, yes, it is,
It's
but
the
they don't.
same sort of tool then as being in a meeting, an AI doing this, taking the notes of the meeting, isn't it, and producing minutes and
But
stuff.
sometimes a doctor can, they are legally allowed now to just glance at that record. They don't have to cross-check everything. There's only a certain percentage they legally have to check now because it's recognized. So yes, you're right, Dave, like they do. They absolutely should check, but it's not a requirement as such anymore. They can just look at it.
And they are
But
getting
you're
more accurate, and in the context specific use, they're going to be more reliable because they know they're looking at particular types of data. Just want to come up, Jeff. You've had your hand raised for a little while, so do you want to come in?
Yeah, thanks. Just wanted to say, I think this has been quite reassuring in that it's sort of being a good summary, a basic summary. And you, if you've sort of got a general understanding, it's very reassuring to know I'm not missing anything huge. And also that my assessment of things being very muddled and complicated and immature is actually quite correct, really, from what JC's been saying. So it's really good. Thanks.
I'd pull back.
Thanks, Jeff.
I'd question to say on immature. I think my argument would be it's massively more mature than people would have you think. It's just massively more complicated. So all of the talk about you can't do this and you can't do that's all nonsense from 3 years ago. But it isn't 100% perfect, so I can't tell you it will never make a mistake. It will hardly ever make a mistake, but you need to know it can make mistakes, and that's my job. But it is it's the opposite of mature. As I say, I can sit here now and I could have a complete website up for you based on this conversation within 10 minutes, because it's that complicated now. It's that sophisticated.
Yeah, thanks. CJ,
Oh,
just another hand up. So,
no
Roger, do you want to
problem.
come in?
Yeah, good. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, good. Okay. I've learned something so basic tonight, I just want to share it. I use Copilot all the time for good reason. I think it's a paid-for model and therefore quite advanced. It's easy to use. I know where everything is, or the things I want are on my computer, so I can get to them and place them and edit. And I had no idea that there were specialist things that I should be looking at. I use AI for everything. I'll give you an example. I love music. I can ask the AI, what's the chord pattern for a particular song? And it will tell me. And it tells me that I can't share the words because they're copyright, but I can share the chord patterns and it gives me, and then I'm on the way to learning that piece. And it's fabulous for stuff. But the point I'm making, I didn't, and I've chose Copilot for the wrong reason. I chose it because it's easy, it works for me, there's no accessibility issues, and it fits my use of the computer.
That's all the
I
right
wish
reasons.
I'd thought, I'd like to have heard your philosophy earlier, and I would have, given more credit to it. So thank you, Julia.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, but those are exactly the right reasons. You picked it for all the right reasons, Roger.
Yep, sounds good to me. If it works, don't keep working using it, and it will be improving all the time. So yeah,
Well,
keep
excellent.
working with
Sounds
it. And I've got another question
right
from
over.
Raymond. Raymond, do you want to go ahead?
Yeah, thanks, Julian.
All right.
Question regarding websites. I get the impression that more and more VI people are struggling to use websites compared to, say, 10, 15 years ago when they were relatively more accessible and usable. When constructing a website or improving a website, would Would one of these assistants do a better job than a human, and certainly far quicker, but would they do a better job in designing it as a first draft, and then the human could check through it implicitly to see that everything was as it should be, as it should be?
Can I say something controversial?
Go on.
I don't think humans should have anything to do with websites ever again.
Wow.
I don't think web I think anyone who tells me AI can't fix web accessibility needs to get themselves a new job because they are being immoral and unethical.
Yeah, but we've been banging on about this for decades, haven't we?
Yeah, but we didn't have AI for decades, did we? We've
No,
now got
but we've had human intervention, and they just don't
Yes.
seem to have the will to do it.
So I think the
But
fundamental problem with this is, so I agree with you to the first point that you say AI could do it. The issue that we're having, unfortunately, is that AI doesn't have to adhere to WCAG. So the problem we're having at the moment is, unless you specifically ask your AI to adhere to WCAG, unfortunately, we're having a lot of websites pop up that are not usable for blind people because it's not adhering to W. But that's because the website developers are not asking for that.
But in
It well
doing
exactly
that, could in asking AI to do that, could you not ask it to bear in mind the accessible guidelines
You
and
can, but the problem
design it
is that
bearing that in mind?
you can, but the problem is that if a standard website developer doesn't know anything about accessibility, unless it's embedded in the AI framework, unless that person specifically says adhere to WCAG, they're not going to adhere to it. And that's why, unfortunately, at the moment, we're seeing a lot of inaccessible websites pop up.
So when my agents write my website, they write a WCAG double stroke triple A compliant website, and they also adhere to my own design standard called Zero Information Casualty. And it creates a website that meets both of those standards and is 100% accessible with no effort at all from me because
Yeah,
I tell it to. Okay, so you said it was okay for me to promote my group on Facebook, didn't you?
we can
Yeah.
put a yeah, we'll put a link on,
Okay,
yeah.
well, I'd like to invite if all any of you who are on Facebook, we have a group called AI with the Blind, from what AI space with space the space blind, which is a Facebook group where I post a lot of information every day and people can ask questions and basically just like my posts. So if anybody wants to join us there, I think we've got about 2,000 odd members so far, so that's available. My website is Charlie, Charli dot info. There's a section called Together With, and under that's called Confidence with AI. That's where all of the material for this course will be stored for the foreseeable future. That'll be in the link that Julian sends out. There's a section on there called Carados, which has Carrados, which has all of my accessibility work on there. And that has my thing I call the Tyra framework, and it has my answers to this website's arguments, and it has the zero information casualties information. So if you are interested in web accessibility, that's on there as well. You're free to look at that. The other stuff is my conceptual artwork, which you don't need to look at unless you want to. But that's where the TAVIP information is, Charli.info. You'll get that link in the email. Next week, we're going to really get into the nitty-gritty of image description, of PDFs, of won't be me talking, it will be you listening to me using AI on my computer. Next week, it is really about I'm going to attach this image to ChatGPT. I'm going to ask it to describe it, then I'm going to ask it to do something else. I'm going to ask it to help me visualize the layout of the Middle East as a person who hasn't been able to see a map of the Middle East for the last 40 years. That's a technique. I'm going to get it to help me understand visual concepts like a parabola. That's another thing that you can do with AI. So one of the beauties of AI is you can get it to change how it talks about different things. That'll all be next week. Any final thoughts, Julian?
No, that's really helpful. I do think it's been a helpful introduction and sort of setting the context. But yeah, next week will be sort of the practical bits and providing further links. And then the third session is going to be, I think,
Safety.
safety. But I think we'll adapt and shape that based on the first two sessions of what we've covered here.
which is sort of covered, perhaps touched on some of that. So thank you so much, CJ, for your
You're
time
welcome.
preparing this evening's session. It's been a really thought-provoking evening, so thank you very much. Thank you to everyone who's attended. We will share an audio recording.
Oh,
We'll be
for
sending out
my brother.
a link for next week's session as well. Do email us on the usual info@tabit.org.uk if you have any questions or reflections you'd like us to cover in the next two sessions, so that we can make sure it shapes around what people want to hear and find out more about. And as AI is such a developing area of interest, I'm sure there'll be other sessions that we can look at, in the months coming. So lots to discuss. Do join us next week. Thank you very much indeed. From myself and CJ, have a good evening. Thank you for
Thank
coming.
you. Goodbye.
Lovely. Thanks, everyone. Good night.
Thank you both. Thank you, Charlie.
Thanks.
Thank you,
You're
Julian.
welcome. You're welcome.
Thanks very much.
Thank
Good to see
you.
you.
Thanks.
Thanks for
Thank
joining.
you,
Thank
guys.
Thanks. Bye-bye.